y'all, and welcome to Southern Fried Spooky, the podcast home of all things Southern Spooky, and this week, Deadly?
Deadly.
Not the first time we've done that. I'm your Carolina girl, Heather.
And I'm your Florida man, Tony.
Suffering the pollen still.
Indeed.
Please seek out our Facebook page and leave us some likes and comments. Also, feel free to haunt our Patreon. Please consider some 5-star reviews on your podcast platform of choice. Mm-hmm. Okay, down to business.
Yeah.
This week, we are visiting a haunted stretch of Charleston, South Carolina.
What part of Charleston is not haunted?
Good question. The charming streets of Charleston wear the mantle of 350-something years of history.
Hence haunted.
Earthquake bolts and ornate ironwork adorn antebellum dwellings, while copper lanterns and hitching posts hint at a bygone era. That seems more than a hint.
Yeah.
The details of this architecturally rich city reveal themselves when its sidewalks, seawalls, and secret alleyways are explored on foot. Mm. They want you to walk around. By the way, I found a list of 9 of the Holy City's hidden pathways, including the Unitarian Church Graveyard,
okay.
Bedens Alley, Longitude Lane, Philadelphia Alley, Price's Alley, St. Michael's Alley, so many alleys, right. Stoll's, Unity, and Horlbeck Alley.
All right.
Alleys.
Those close to Hogan's Alley. Diagon Alley.
Not quite. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that was just funny. So first, let us set the scene. We're going to address specifically Philadelphia Alley.
Okay.
It's a quiet little stretch of road nestled between Church and State Streets, all of one block long. Now, originally it was known as Cow Alley, and we suspect it had something to do with the movement of cattle through town.
Indeed.
In 1766, it was renamed Kinloch Court. The man responsible for the genesis of Philadelphia Alley was a Charlestonian of Scots ancestry named Francis Kinloch.
Matt Kinloch.
In three...
Clan McKinloch!
In three separate transactions, in 1751, 57, and 66, Mr. Kinloch purchased 3 adjacent parcels of land on the north side of Queen Street. These acquisitions combined to form a broad, rectangular lot that extended a sizable distance.
You know what looked good here, laddie? An alley!
Here he built a genteel house facing Queen Street for himself and his family, behind which he erected 4 tenement houses for rental purposes. To facilitate access to the rental tenements, he created a narrow passageway or court leading northward from Queen Street, which became known as Kinloch's Court. So it was a drive-through area, I guess, if you could do that. In 1810, a fire broke out in the city. The city of Philadelphia sent aid to the port city of Charleston. In 1811... Charleston native and U.S. Supreme Court Justice William Johnson renamed it Philadelphia Alley, in honor of the City of Brotherly Love's contribution. That remains its official name. Locals, however, refer to it as Dueler's Alley.
This place has so many different names.
It's got an identity crisis, I feel.
What are we calling it this month?
It has an old name, a new name, an official name, and then what people just call it who live there. Okay, some background exposition. Mm-hmm. The practice of dueling dates to medieval times.
Now, we're talking about, like, the pistols, like, the brothers in Haunted Mansion, the pistols walking back and forth. Yeah, okay.
That, or even, you know, sword dueling, but specifically...
Well, I don't think they meant Yu-Gi-Oh! Dueling, but, I mean...
Most of us have likely heard of the story of the famous 1804 duel between Alexander Hamilton, the first U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, when he was mortally wounded by then Vice President Aaron Burr.
Yeah.
If you somehow came out of the pandemic and had not watched Hamilton, you probably live on a rock.
Yeah.
Actually, it may still be on Disney Plus. I don't know. Go and watch it if you haven't seen it.
Well, there was the, not to extend the time here or anything, but there was the story, and I'll have to find it. It may be interesting to cover. There was a duel that happened. 2 men fighting over something, as men do, apparently.
Apparently.
One man fires and misses the guy who had offended him in some way. And the bullet, which is a ball, a lead ball, gets lodged into a tree.
Okay.
The other guy fires, killing the man who first fired.
Ah.
The man who won took the land, took the guy's wife, whatever.
Woo.
And some years later decided he didn't like that tree and they were going to dynamite it. He lit the dynamite, walked away, and was killed by the bullet that was meant to kill him like 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yes. The bullet literally shot out of the tree, went through the guy's heart, killed him dead.
The tree had good aim.
Yes.
That's impressive.
Yep.
Now, Charleston, probably more than any other American city, was the setting for numerous affairs of honor, a euphemism for dueling.
Mm-hmm.
According to Dr. David Ramsey, a respected physician and noted historian in the late 18th and early 19th centuries, the propensity for dueling in Charleston was mostly due to the climate because warm weather and its attendant increase of bile in the stomach generated an irritable temper which made men say and do things thoughtlessly.
Sounds like someone from the South.
Most Charleston duels took place from June through September. So blame the weather and men's irritable humors. I imagine women were too hysterical or afflicted with the vapors to engage in duels.
You want to hear something funny? That is pretty funny, but you want to hear something else kind of interesting? You know those whole Wild West showdown duels?
Oh, yeah.
They very rarely happened.
Well, yeah.
Like, I mean, it was only like a handful of times that actually happened.
Oh, and as an address on the ladies dueling, it wasn't typical, but I know you and I have thought about this before. Sometime, wasn't it Renaissance era? There was a princess and a duchess of some sort.
Yes,
who...
and they went shirtless and had a sword duel over decorations.
Yes, because they were intent and excited about flower arranging.
They stripped their tops off, pulled swords, and proceeded to not kill each other, but hurt each other with swords, poking at each other until one of them was right.
Okay. Yes, well, Charleston ladies are too delicate for that.
Right? Tell that to the women in the Victorian time.
Right. However, okay, so the papers would cover some of these duels. There were some well-written, fabulous anecdotes recorded in the newspapers of the day. On May 25th, 1839, a, quote, duel was fought at the lower end of Broad Street between a Mr. Fell and a Mr. Harriet. Not Aziraphale, I hope.
Right.
The former shot in the foot to keep him from running, and the latter in the mouth to keep him from jawing.
Well, my good sir, it would appear that this man missed a prime opportunity to keep his mouth shut.
Right. Christopher Gadsden, which I think one of our street names is named after him, and Major General Robert Howe, 1778. Christopher Gadsden, the Charleston super patriot and designer of the Gadsden Don't Tread on Me flag.
That's the one with the snake, right?
Yeah, the No Step on Snake.
Yeah, I want the one that has, like, Johnny Five, where it's like, no disassemble.
Yes. He accused General Howe, an officer of the Continental Army, of cowardice and challenged his credibility as a man.
You, sir, are a coward!
During the ensuing duel, Howe's bullet missed Gadsden's face by inches, whereupon Gadsden deliberately fired straight down into the ground and then challenged Howe to try it again. Finally, some reason prevailed, and the two principals shook hands and went their separate ways.
That's kind of funny. You missed. Want to do it again? Okay, we're good.
As a footnote, dueling wasn't necessarily about killing your opponent. I mean, obviously it happened.
Yeah.
Sometimes. It was all about chivalry and honor. Oh, Mr. Gadsden, you're so full of chivalry.
Right.
A man willing to participate in a duel was seen as one who was willing to die for his honor because, what, toxic masculinity or something?
When in fact a lot of them didn't die.
Well, true. In fact, well, though, I think any kind of wounding would probably be ultimately fatal back then.
Eventually. If not absolutely 100% life-altering, debilitating.
Oh, yeah. It was considered if you didn't participate in a duel after having been publicly insulted, it would have taken quite a toll on the man's reputation. But dying or being desperately injured was an expected outcome. So it was serious business. Today, most of us would find this a little ineffective way for two people to settle their differences.
Well, I mean, nowadays it's just a flame war online.
Or lawsuits, or, you know.
In the 80s, it was your mama jokes.
But at this time, in 1881, dueling was legal. Mm-hmm. Up until 1881. And even after it was made illegal, we've all heard of the duelists who just go outside of the city limits to reconcile their differences.
And what's really cool is they had pistols specifically for dueling.
Oh, yeah.
And they had, like, each man would have, like, someone would join them a second,
yes,
is what they would call them. And if that man could no longer perform the duel, his friend would have to duel.
Oof.
Yeah.
Come be the best man at my duel. No thanks. Are we friends? I didn't know that.
Dude, I met you like 3 minutes ago.
So within the city, while it was still legal,
mm-hmm,
duelers took to Philadelphia Alley. It had high walls on either side and limited access at the ends, so it made it very perfectly suitable for dueling each other and not hurting any bystanders. And now, our dramatis personae, the people involved.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph Brown Ladd.
I'm sorry, did you? I assume you were telling the people. I knew exactly what you meant.
Of course you know. Just in case someone didn't know.
Okay. Dramatis personae. It means the people involved in the incident.
The cast of characters.
Yes.
Should be easy. We only have two. Joseph Brown Ladd. He was not a native Charlestonian. He was born near Newport, Rhode Island, in 1764. In case you're wondering, this all does end up, or lead up to, a haunting at the end of this.
Okay.
After a murder. So, okay, back to this. He was the son of a farmer. He whistled while he worked, very,
Seven Dwarves?
Yeah, kinda. He whistled whilst, and at the same time, working the fields under his father's supervision. But he was a daydreamer, mostly interested in fine arts.
Daydream believer and a homecoming queen. Sorry.
He dreamed of using his mind, not actual physical labor, to make his way in life, which resulted in a slightly turbulent relationship with his father.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph's father, William Ladd, loved his son, even if he didn't understand him or his love of the arts. He recognized that Joseph was just miserable on the farm in Rhode Island, and fearing that his son would leave, allowed Joseph to spend more time pursuing his intellectual interests at the Redwood Library in Newport. And it was at the library that Joseph met his true love, Amanda.
Oh, I was going to say books, but I guess Amanda works.
Well, he already liked books. He knew that. We don't know her last name. I'm sure it's recorded somewhere.
From here on out, she shall just be known as Amanda. But I don't know a Samantha. Sorry.
Now, Joseph would spend hours with her, writing poetry for her and professing his love. You know, this is what happened in days before cell phones.
And then people cut off their earlobes and send it to their cousins. Please, if anybody gets that joke.
Right. After several weeks, he explained to his father that he was serious about Amanda. Several weeks he was serious. And he wanted to marry her, but he didn't know how to first establish himself. William Ladd referred Joseph to family friend and physician Dr. Isaac Center. Joseph apprenticed with Dr. Center, and soon after was well on his way to becoming a doctor himself. It was just that easy.
Well, I mean, okay, so you said within, like, what, several weeks?
Yep.
So, not to kick that dead horse or anything, but Romeo and Juliet took place over a 4-day time period and ended up in 6 deaths.
Yeah.
So...
it was a bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a busy weekend for them, really. He, Joseph, and Amanda discussed marriage, but Joseph wanted to wait until he was an established doctor so that he could provide for a family. Now, Amanda was an orphan of wealthy parents and explained that waiting wasn't really necessary. All of her family's money belonged to her. Which is kind of unusual.
Right.
So, Joseph was convinced. He called upon Amanda's guardian. Now, depending on what source you're looking at, the guardian was a lawyer who just managed her finances. Others said it was her actual uncle.
Oh, okay.
In a turn right out of Dickens, the lawyer, knowing he would lose his comfortable stipend if Amanda married, turned Joseph away. The guardian, lawyer, slash uncle also began a ruthless campaign against Joseph and told everyone who would listen that Joseph was a scoundrel. He just wanted the poor orphan's money.
Now, I'm envisioning some, like, mustache-twirling evil villain.
Right?
Like, I shall marry her!
I don't think he was trying to marry her himself.
Yeah.
Especially if he was an uncle, but...
Oh, God, we're leading into a series of unfortunate events right here.
Yeah, somewhere, and maybe even a little bit of Sweeney Todd. Yeah. I don't know. Gossip spread, as it does. There's a wonderful line from Terry Pratchett that, what is it, like a rumor can be halfway across the world before the truth even has its pants on?
Yep.
Gossip spread. People in Newport started to act a little differently towards Joseph. They avoided eye contact. They whispered behind his back. And it began to affect Dr. Center's practice. Dr. Center finally pulled Joseph aside and explained the situation. He knew Amanda's guardian was slandering his apprentice. But because Joseph hadn't waited until he'd gotten him established himself, public perception of him was tarnished. And the lawyer's story was easy to believe. And the solution was, Joseph had to leave town and see himself established elsewhere.
Banishment?
It kind of.
Please, Prince, say good death. Anything but banishment.
So Dr. Joseph Ladd arrived in Charleston in October of 1783. Dr. Center, an acquaintance of Revolutionary General Nathaniel Greene, had leveraged his relationship with said general to secure a residence for his apprentice. Charleston, depleted of medical professionals due to Revolutionary War, was a good place for a young doctor to begin. Stepping off the carriage, he beamed with hope and whistled a happy tune. We know this to be true.
Right?
I guess. He was dirty and tired from the trip, and he wanted to clean up before presenting himself to his new landladies, Fanny and Delly Rose, at 59 Church Street. The naive young doctor asked for directions to a nearby inn of his carriage driver, and the man directed this new doctor to Jones Tavern on Meeting Street. A gentleman happened to be sitting nearby. He intervened when he heard this conversation. He introduced himself as Ralph Isaacs and explained that if Joseph went to this tavern, he would certainly be robbed and possibly slain. It was a rough place.
Apparently.
Isaacs directed Joseph to a more suitable, safer establishment. Joseph and Ralph Isaacs became good friends after that.
Hey, fitting.
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
Bro. Don't go into that part of town.
It almost makes me wonder if, like, did people disappear? Was there, like, Shanghaiing going on?
In Charleston, probably.
I mean, Port City, it could happen.
Yeah, to those people who don't understand, Shanghaiing is when you're kidnapped and forced into servitude upon a boat.
Yes. Though I think it mostly happened off the West Coast, didn't it?
There was a couple of pretty hot Shanghai places on the East Coast as well. Charleston, Savannah was a big one for Shanghaiing.
And they called it that because frequently the ships were sent to the Orient.
Yeah.
Somewhere in Asia, usually China.
Yeah.
And usually it was they waited till someone was good and drunk.
Yep.
And then
threw them down a chute.
More or less.
Yeah.
And if they survived that, they would be taken through tunnels to a boat and taken away to a brand new life they were not expecting.
Though, funny enough, well, not funny enough, but incidentally, I guess you could say, only 4 or 5 women were ever reported Shanghaied.
Well, I think generally they prefer, you know, quote, able-bodied men.
Yeah,
and there's this whole thing of women are bad luck on board, that kind of thing.
And then there was the one who they Shanghaied a woman and tried to take her aboard a boat so they could sell her into servitude, we'll just say.
Indeed, yes.
But she led a revolt and killed everybody on the boat and then burned it the hell down.
Impressive.
Yeah. She apparently did not want to go.
That whole thing about a woman scorned, right?
Yeah, right.
I shall not be a prostitute. I shall become an arsonist.
Like, no, she literally went on rampage. Like,
right?
they got her drunk, threw her in the hold. When she woke up, nobody was safe. Not including the people who had been Shanghaied themselves.
Oh, dear.
If she didn't free them, they went down with the boat.
Oops.
Sorry.
Oh, no, I enjoyed that. Joseph, remember him?
Mm-hmm.
He was able to quickly establish himself as a prominent new doctor in Charleston. His landladies, the sisters, adored him. And they looked forward to his cheerful whistling as he dressed in the morning and when he returned home in the evening and during the long hours he'd spend in his room, always whistling and always writing poetry for his beloved Amanda.
Fanny, Joseph's getting dressed.
Now, I'm one of those people that, I guess if it's an actual song, that's fine, but I used to work with someone who just would whistle tunelessly, and there were times that I'm like, if she doesn't stop, I'm putting a cork in her face.
You know what's really funny is, like, whenever I start whistling, even at fair, I will do the stop whistling from Robin Hood.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yep.
I don't mind that. But if it's just kind of noise, it's like, please don't. He told them animated stories of his life in Newport and of his dear love, Amanda, and he confided to them his troubles with Amanda's guardian slash lawyer slash uncle, and his true reason for moving to Charleston. Over the next couple of years, he published over 70 poems in the American Museum, which is, curiously, a magazine, with a subscription list that included Benjamin Franklin, John Jay, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and George Washington.
Wow.
You know, nobody.
Yeah, absolutely nobody paid attention to that one. Wow.
Right? Ladd also became part of Charleston's intellectual and social community.
Which,
I don't know if it's
fairly upstanding right there.
Right. I mean, Charleston's one of those old world kind of cities where if you... It's like, who are your people? You know, if you're well established and in the right circles, you could definitely go far.
Oh, yeah. And we're talking like... It's people would have intellectual parties.
Oh, like, yeah, they like would, the salons.
Yeah, like they would go in for brandy and cigars and speak of the arts and stuff. And it was a pretty big affair back then.
Oh, yeah, definitely. On July 4th, 1785, at the invitation of Governor William Moultrie, he delivered...
Is that Moultrie or Moultier?
No, that's Moultrie.
Oh.
Heard of Fort Moultrie?
Oh, okay.
He delivered a patriotic address before the Sons of Cincinnati of South Carolina. I have no idea what that is.
Is there a Cincinnati, South Carolina?
Not to my knowledge, but maybe.
Mm.
Now we have to look that up.
Yep.
Maybe it was just the name of the group. I don't know.
Maybe.
So Dr. Ladd was charming, funny, young, handsome. He was genuine and well-liked by all who met him. And as his popularity grew, his social status grew. And remember Ralph Isaacs?
Yeah.
He
great uncle to Jason Isaacs. Yeah, I remember him.
Absolutely. He was becoming jealous that Ladd had new friends and an expanded social calendar.
Oh.
Isaacs, in a resentful sort of way, began to make biting comments to Joseph, telling the doctor that he was too important now to spend time with Isaacs. He
was look at him!
Middle class, I guess?
He's ugly, his feet stink, and he does not love Jesus.
But Joseph was a cheerful sort, and he had no desire to alienate his friend. He tried to introduce Isaacs to members of Charleston's high society. He invited Isaacs to social gatherings and tried to include him. But Isaacs was not comfortable in these social circles. He longed for social status that Joseph had, but was, well, not comfortable when he got it.
You know... Yeah, that's some crap right there. It's like, I am absolutely jealous of you. Well, I'm offering it to you on a silver plate. I don't want it! I'm still jealous! It's like,
yeah.
Are you serious right now? Dude, you deserve a bullet. Sorry.
Well, all this tension came to a boiling point in 1786. Both men attended a production of Shakespeare's Richard III.
Ooh, Richard III.
Indeed.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
Dr. Ladd saw the show from a luxurious box. Isaac sat in the stuffy commoner section. That was still a thing. As the two men walked together after the show, Isaac basically picked a fight. He instigated an argument about one of the actresses. Isaacs thought she was terrible. Dr. Ladd is a little more understanding, and he defended her by saying she was just young and inexperienced. So Isaacs, naturally, accused Ladd of being infatuated with the actress.
Thou art consortist with the actress?
He threatened to write Amanda, detailing a sordid relationship, which obviously would have been a work of fiction. Joseph, no doubt, was hurt and angry about his friend's intentions, but rather than get into a brawl, and Isaacs would have loved nothing more, Joseph simply stuck out his hand to bid Ralph Isaacs good night. Isaacs only spat on the ground and turned away. Very disrespectful.
Dude, you hit my foot.
So over the next few weeks, Isaacs rebuffed all of Joseph's attempts at contact.
Well, it seems like Joseph was like trying to like keep the peace, as it were.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, he's like, bro, I don't want any of this. What's wrong with you? And, oh, nope, you are popular. I want that, but I can't handle it, so therefore I hate you.
Yeah, so he's doing sort of what we would probably now call ghosting him.
Yeah.
But not entirely, not just breaking off contact. He started writing letters. He wrote a letter to the Charleston Morning Post and Daily Advertiser, publicly slandering Dr. Joseph Ladd. It stated... I dare affirm that the event of a little time will convince the world that the self-created doctor is as blasted a scoundrel as has ever disgraced humanity.
Most unorthodox!
Isaacs was jealous of Ladd's success, and publicly called Ladd a social climber that cared only for money, and a quack.
Oof. Dim's fighting words, buddy.
I mean, shots fired.
Yeah.
Ladd responded in the paper by writing, "I account it one of the misfortunes of my life that I ever became friends with such a man."
Wow, talk about shots fired.
I know, right? And even then, he seems, I don't know, gracious?
Yeah.
Like, he just simply says, "I'm sorry that I ever became friends with him."
Yep.
He does not
like he's
talk
not
bad
mud,
about
he's
him.
Not mudslinging at this
no,
point.
No.
He's just like, "Look, yeah, this sucks. Sorry I ever met you, bro."
Basically. Finally, the explosive action. Ladd, now faced with defending his reputation and honor, agonized over what he should do. All he wanted to do was make his way in his new hometown, buy a sliver of the earth to call home, and raise a family with Amanda.
Yeah.
But Isaacs had insulted his honor. Publicly! Very publicly!
I mean, in the papers.
Right?
That's
back
like,
then, that
that's
was
like calling somebody out on Facebook nowadays.
Absolutely.
Or whatever the kids are using nowadays.
All the things. Friends advised Ladd that he couldn't just leave and start over again. And he really didn't want to.
They're
and in Charleston, friends told him, matters of honor were settled with a duel. They said that not offering or issuing a duel challenge was evidence of cowardice. It would show that Dr. Ladd lacked character, honor, and integrity. Joseph reluctantly challenged Ralph Isaacs to a duel. So, yay, peer pressure and masculinity of the time.
Yeah.
Joseph wrote a letter to Amanda on the eve of his duel. He was filled, understandably, with dread and anxiety, telling her that a friendly death may soon relieve my pain. He was also a bit dramatic, it seemed. But then again, I guess that warrants some dramatic
words. Writer, is he? Row your boat!
Before he knew it, dawn approached on October 28th. I feel it's wrong that they should do these so early. It's like, you haven't even woken up and had coffee yet. A soft knock on his door cemented the reality of what was to come.
Can you imagine that? Hey, Joe, ready for the duel? Time to get up.
The Rose sisters, remember them?
Mm-hmm.
Walked with Joseph onto Church Street, where his friends met him and accompanied him the rest of the way to Dueler's Alley, since they were the ones who talked him into
mm-hmm.
it. There was a fog hanging in the narrow alley next to St. Philip's Church graveyard. I mean, that's a scene, isn't it?
Right.
He met Isaacs. They chose their firearms, and I do imagine that kind of box where they're sort of crisscrossed
yeah.
above each other, and started their 21 paces. All the rules of duels in particular are apparently written down in a particular codex.
Yeah, and they're kept in the box with the dueling guns. Stand back to back, count 21, spin and fire.
Yep.
You know how long 21 paces is, right?
Well, if you're both doing it, it's kind of a long distance.
Yeah.
Like 42 steps, depending on someone's stride.
Yep.
That's a goodly bit away.
Yep, it is 50 feet.
And you probably know more about this than I do, but in this time, it's, what did we say, like 18-something?
Oh, yeah.
How accurate are pistols at this time?
Okay, so
you know way more about guns than I do.
Back then, they didn't have what we know as pistols.
Uh-huh.
You know what a bullet looks like? Lead tip comes in a cartridge, is fired with a primer, that shoots out, and it rotates.
Right.
In a spiral, just so people, you're watching me, but this is so people can understand. The bullet rotates in a spiral. Back then...
That's called rifling, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Back then, it was wadding powder, wadding round lead ball on top of that.
So are we talking muskets at this time?
Yes.
Really?
Okay. Powder pistols.
I mean, is that what we see in Hamilton?
Yes.
If people want a really good visual aid.
So, when you fire...
Okay, this is the 1780s, mind you.
So, when you fire, they're nowhere as near as accurate as bullets are nowadays.
So, even if someone has good aim, God knows where the ball is going.
The balls tumble. They do this.
Explain what do this is.
Okay, they move in like a clockwise pattern. They will veer off left to right. And any kind of jump in the gun, any kind of gust of wind, because the ball is round, will blow it off trajectory. In the Revolutionary War, even in the Civil War, when they were using these powder rifles, most of what they were aiming at, the balls were off course by 50 or 60 feet. These were not accurate at all.
Though I guess if you're aiming at a line of advancing people, you're going to hit something.
The reason why it is 21 paces is because that is the furthest in accuracy you can get from a powder pistol.
Well, after okay, so that,
you've lost accuracy completely.
Okay, so now we can see why using an alley would be good, so you don't, you know, kill anyone yes. else.
And they are well, highly freaking known to misfire or backfire. In any kind of these movies, like, go back and watch The Patriot, because uh-huh. they did this really well. When you see the guys, they're lined up, they're on these, you know, Civil War lines, and they're lined up. When they fire, they turn their head. The reason why they turn their head is
just in case.
There is a high likelihood that that ball is going to come right back.
Ooh, yes. Not good.
A lot of people lost their faces because their guns misfired.
Eee. Okay, dumb aerodynamics question.
Mm-hmm.
And this may not be related at all, but I know that, like, with golfing, they have to really calculate in, you know, wind yes, and all kinds absolutely. Of other stuff. Does any of that kind of stuff come in? I mean, how with, similar is a golf okay, ball to, you know, a musket ball?
I mean,
like, any imperfections in the ball?
In all actuality, they weigh about the same, and I'm not joking.
And another question is, wouldn't it, especially at a distance, wouldn't it kind of feel like being hit by a really hard paintball? Or yeah. can that actually...
And keep in mind, bullets back then, like bullets nowadays, they go in.
They're pointy.
They're pointy. They're meant to go in, and when they're inside, now this is a little graphic, when they're inside they open
yeah.
and then continue out. That's what does the damage. Those balls, they didn't flatten, they didn't freaking open, they went through, and instead of pulling things, they pushed things through.
Ah.
It was like instead of it cutting through, it was moving things out of the way.
Ah.
So
you would end up with, again, sort of graphic, some really large entry wounds, wouldn't you?
If someone got shot in the leg from a musket ball, they usually lost the leg no matter where they got shot.
Oh,
but just due to the damage that these things would do.
Interesting. Well, you're not going to like how this goes.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. I definitely was very curious. They're at their 21 paces. Mm-hmm. Lad is probably thinking about Amanda and, you know, possibilities of a happy life. And how did he end up here?
Yep.
He reached his 21st step. He turned and intentionally fired wide of his target. A lot of people did that just so they could go through the, I had my duel, but I don't really want to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
I think that happened in Hamilton, though I can't truly remember. And he didn't really want to hurt his friend, and he yeah. really hoped he didn't get hurt himself. Isaacs, however, because it was foggy, rather gloated that Lad had missed. He basically said, "You missed!" He took careful aim, if you can do that in the fog, and he fired. Lad was hit in the knee.
Yeah.
Which, okay, for anyone listening, that'll may take, not sound
that'll take,
bad.
That'll take your damn leg off with a damn musket ball.
Well, his bones utterly shattered. Yep. Now, some sources say both knees, but I'm not sure how you can do that with one shot.
Oh, wait. When you fired, you were sideways.
Uh-huh.
So if it hit one knee, it was going to go through it and hit the other one. Because you didn't fire with your chest flat. You fired to the side, so you were giving them small targets. Most kills were made to the side, or to the head, or the neck.
I'm glad I have you on this yep. one.
Trust me, if it's about firearms or murder, I probably know it.
Chances are. So, at that point, the duel was over.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph's friends carried him a few blocks back to his flat, where he laid there suffering for 10 days before he died.
Yep,
being that you are also an EMT.
We're talking sepsis, talking most infections.
Like, I know he's the doctor. You would have to hope that there was maybe another one, but it never says that he saw anybody.
In knees, we're talking vital organs. I mean, like, you're going to lose a lot of blood. It's going to be slow, but you're going to lose a lot of blood. It's like getting shot in the stomach. The wound probably won't kill you. It's the infection that will.
Yeah.
We're talking loss of limb, your body's going into shock, a myriad of infections can happen at this point.
Well, if he's talking, like, shattered bone, then you definitely have a lot of issues.
I guarantee you it got gangrenous really quick.
Probably.
Yeah, it doesn't... 10 days, it doesn't surprise me.
'Cause, again,
especially without medical attention.
Yeah, which is kind of baffling. I'm like, obviously he was no condition to do it himself.
And back then, back here, they did not have penicillin
or
any kind of antibiotics as we know them now.
They didn't know about that yet.
Yeah,
right.
They what they did was they probably covered the wound, and a good bit of information if you have a wound and it starts smelling like burnt almonds, it's Ew. Gangrenous.
Gross.
And that will cause septicemia. That uh-huh. will also cause flesh-eating bacteria.
Okay.
It can cause anything, and it basically just
ends up poisoning your blood.
Yeah. Like that, without any kind of proper medical attention, like their best bet would be to cauterize the wound.
I was gonna ask, like, couldn't they just
take a hot iron and put it to it, and then wrap it up and hope like hell he survives?
Yeah, but it seems like nothing was done. At least, not that I could find.
Yeah.
Now, get this: he was 22.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is startlingly young.
Well, I mean, Doc Holliday graduated college at 17. True. And then they were like, nope, you can't hold a practice until you're 21. I mean,
what?
Oh. Yeah, like he could
well,
not.
He was pretty young, too.
He could not practice dentistry until he was 21.
Interesting. So, what did he. Well, we covered him, but I'm like, what did he do for those several years?
Well, he ran around, he helped practices and stuff like that, but he also became a pretty well known gambler,
which
back then was an actual profession.
Fair enough. So back to our gentleman here.
Yeah. Yeah, the 10 days, not surprising.
Yeah, but I can only imagine what that must have felt
like. Pure freaking agony.
And what would they have had for painkillers back then? Laudanum, maybe?
Laudanum, morphine. What, 1700s? Laudanum, morphine, cocaine. They would have used digitalis, but that may have caused a lot of problems in the heart, so... I mean, they would have had things, but it would have been more like, you need an ear nail or a donkey kicking, you know, something like that. Like, they, of course, their medicines were not as potent as ours right now.
Or they were overly potent and like, okay, well, this is going to put you out for a while.
They had, back then, they had cocaine chewing gum.
Yeah.
Yep.
Allegedly, that was where Coca-Cola got its name.
Yep.
Amusingly, I just remember this one post that was just like, stop giving us new Coke flavors and just bring back the cocaine laced one. I'd go for that.
So, you'd never sleep again.
I know, right? Caffeine was bad enough for me.
So yeah, there's very, if it hit him just above the knees, there's nothing they could have done for him. Not back then, not at all. It would have been a slow, agonizing death.
So even like amputation, if they had someone available.
Even, I mean, back then, let's say, what?
I mean, there was something of a success
here.
1786.
So this is around the time of the Liston knife.
Uh-huh.
But I think I've explained to you the Liston knife and all
its
that.
Speed.
Yes.
Efficiency.
But still, back then, amputations were quick, dirty, and usually about 30% died.
If not more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So iffy, but...
Yeah.
So, kids, don't...
Don't duel your best friend and get shot in the legs and not get it treated.
Well, I was just going to say, don't fall prey to peer pressure, but, yeah. You know. So, today,
mm-hmm.
Philadelphia Alley is still known as Duelers Alley. Most, many...
Which is kind of cool.
It is. Ghost tours stop in the alley, and they recount the story of Dr. Joseph Brown Ladd. Visitors have reported ghostly activity, unexplained mist, sounds of gunshots. Some have reported being nudged out of the way of invisible gunfire. Many have heard the young doctor's happy whistling all the way down the alley and even in the house, 59 Church Street, which is currently a private residence.
Oh.
The story goes that Dr. Ladd can be heard moving around the house, walking from place to place, opening and closing doors, whistling in the mornings and the afternoons, and on rainy evenings calling for Amanda. Quote, oh, Amanda, my love.
Next time we're in Charleston, we will definitely have to get some, like, video and
oh, yeah.
And stuff and put it on our Patreon.
Now, naturally, as is the case with most of our presentations here,
mm-hmm.
there are historians, specifically Charleston historians, who state that all these dramatic tales of duels are purely fictional.
Yeah.
And as always, that information is disappointing.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, we don't know what Amanda's full name is, and if she was from a wealthy family, one would think it was recorded somewhere.
But then again, we're in the 1780s, where a lot of stuff was not recorded, and if it was pretty overlooked.
Especially, I suppose, about an orphan woman.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know. But that is all for today.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that is a lot. Once more, we come to the end of another half hour or so of murderous joy.
45 minutes.
About that. We hope you enjoyed listening to us, and we hope you found the story interesting.
Indeed.
maybe a little bit spooky. Once again, please find us on our socials and comment. Leave us stars, send us glitter, whatever.
Don't send us glitter. You have enough.
Send me glitter. Enough. Join us next week for another sordid adventure. In the meantime, I'm your Carolina girl, Heather.
And I'm your Florida man, Tony.
Who knows all about the the pistols and how to fix pistols.
The ins and outs of just random crap, yeah.
And we are Southern Fried Spooky.
Southern Fried Spooky, sorry.
Unison is beyond you, apparently.
Right.
But until next time, bye y'all.
Yeah. No, that is not a good way to go.
Such
back,
a shame,
back
too.
Then, duels, not pretty.
Not at all.
Not pretty at all.
I don't know, would you rather duel someone or just argue with them on Facebook until you get tired of them?
Well, at least with Facebook, I can make people cry with my words.
And other people laugh.
Yes, indeed.
That's true.